Fantastic. Aloha, everyone. Welcome to Borifuli. I'm so excited for today's guest speaker. Dave Albin is the founder of Firewalk Productions and number one firewalk instructor of America. He's worked for Tony Robbins for about, or actually more than 19 years. And since starting Firewalk Productions in 2014, Dave has helped hundreds of thousands of others to firewalk. He and Tony Robbins set a world record in London in 2005, walking over 12,300 people. His clients include Google, NASA, Tony Robbins, Chick-fil-A, the Four Seasons, Waldorf Astoria, and many, many others. And I am so thrilled to be looking and speaking with the one and only Dave Albin because from the little bit that I know, and I know he's going to share so much today. There's so much that I can feel in his essence. I'm going to ask him to describe his essence in a moment that I feel is just exuding with inspiration. So I'm so thrilled that you're here, Dave. With that being said, let's start off our call or this recording with how would you describe your essence, Dave?
Well, I'm very blessed, that's for sure. Because I spent a great deal of my life trying to destroy it, and it just that wasn't meant to be. And so, I tapped into my purpose and what I thought was the road for me to take, the road less traveled, if you will. And it turned out to be the right thing. And so along the way, I just finally realized that I'm extremely guided and there's a purpose, and I continue to follow that. And in fact, it's just influenced me here in the last couple of months. And I've taken my company and what I do, and we're taking it in a completely different direction. We've been immersed in the personal development industry for, about 3 decades. I was with Tony Robbins for just a little under 20 years. And so corporate America has jumped all over me. And, if they want to create a paradigm shift and they've got things going on, and they need to fix it, like things of dissension, or maybe they're launching a new product, whatever it is. Most CEOs and companies know what doesn't challenge you doesn't change you. So with that in mind, they can come to me, and we definitely get people up out of their seats, and we make them face their fears, and if they'll take the first step, they'll definitely normally take the second, third, fourth, and fifth. So where I'm going with that, Dr. J, is I recognized, I knew this problem was out there. I knew it was a huge challenge. It's been going on for a long time, and now I'm going to go hit it head on. And that's we're losing approximately 20. Well, the number out there is 22 vets a day are taking their lives. Unfortunately, that's not true. That's if they leave a note. So the number is closer to 40. So that's when I got there. I'm a vet. My father that raised me was a highly decorated vet in World War II. So I went, Dave, that's where you got to go. There's the need. They need you, and you can help them. You can help stop what they're, wanting to take their own lives. So, maybe we can talk about that a little bit in the show as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely close and dear to my heart. I did notice you use the word paradigm shift. For people that don't completely understand, can you give us an example of what a paradigm shift would be for you?
Paradigm shift can be looked at in a couple of different ways. For me, it's it. Yeah, sure. The paradigm shift. Well, let me give you one that was very obvious. So when I did my first firewalk back in 1995, I was in an event, Tony Robbins. There were 3,500 people there, and though I wanted to go see Tony, I said no to the firewalk. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. And interestingly enough, Dr. J, when I said no, I didn't even know what a fire walk was. But you took the word fire and walk, and it didn't sound like anything I wanted to do, right? So I'm like, nah, that's a hell no for me. I'm not doing any of that. And then when you get to the seminar, right, Tony took the stage at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the next thing you know, it's after midnight. And I've been in a room with him for 10 hours along with 3,500 people. All of a sudden, Tony goes, take your shoes off. And I'm like, oh, no, pal. I see where you're going with that. I'm not doing that. But now I got a dilemma because I got 3,500 people in the same room with me. And guess what they're doing? They're taking their shoes off. Well, so now what am I going to do? What are you going to do, Davey? Really? You're going to walk out in this big parking lot? See, the firewalk has to go out. They go out. We go outside this big giant parking lot where they facilitated it. So what am I going to do? Walk out there with my shoes on? And everybody's going to go, oh, look at him. You know, he didn't take his shoes off, kind of a thing, right? So my ego took over, obviously. And I said, well, just take your shoes off. No one is going to know. Well, other than me, but that's okay. I'll have to deal with that, right? So when Tony gets everybody going out there, he tricks everybody. I use the word trick. He gets everybody to start clapping and chanting. So they're walking out there going, yes. Yes. And I'm literally walking out there going, no, ain't gonna happen, right? And it gets worse because when you get out there, Tony's got African drummers. So now there's the vibration and the beat of that, right? So it's dun 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 dun. And you're walking out there and you're in the rhythm and everybody's clapping and chanting. And when you get out there over in the corner, there's a giant fire. It's huge. It's like 35 feet wide, 70 feet long, and they've been burning it all day. And so they just keep throwing hardwood on it, you know, cord after cord after cord of wood. And at the end of, you know, 10 hours or so, it renders. And so now you have this big giant pile of blue flame coals. It's gorgeous, right? Well, how do you firewalk people? Well, what you do if you got 3,500 people, you take a bunch of wheelbarrows over to that pit. And you load the coals into the wheelbarrow. And then you bring the wheelbarrow back and you lay two lanes of sod of grass on each side of that wheelbarrow. And that's a fire lane. And so a fire lane's 3 feet wide. It's, you know, respectively 15 to 18 feet long. And then what they do is they take a flathead shovel and they just sprinkle those coals on top of that grass. And that's what you walk on. Well, remember, I'm having none of it. So I go hide in the back. Well, Tony Robbins knows, he researched this. He brought firewalking to the West, you know what, 30 years ago, 25, 30 years ago. And he knows that the firewalk is literally one of the most life-changing experiences any human will go through, period. End of story. Because if you research firewalking, it's been around culturally forever, 1,000 years, right? The Phoenicians. The people of India, the Polynesians, the Hawaiians we were talking about, the people of Portugal, the Spaniards, the Indo-Europeans, the Native American Indians. It's been used for years for rite of passage, for a graduation, for a wedding, for a birth. I mean, it's used beautifully around the world. Well, Tony knows. He again, he researches. So he doesn't want anybody not to do it because he knows you're going to miss out on that shift, on that paradigm that we talked about. And he also knows there's people like me, and he knows where we are. We're hiding in the back. So what's he do? He trains people to come find you. So I think I've got it all figured out, right? I'm hiding in the back. I'm all cool, right? Nope. Because here comes this guy, and he comes out of nowhere, and he makes eye contact with me, and I'm pretty sure Robin's trained him, hey, when you make eye contact with people, don't take your eyes off of them. And so here he comes and he makes eye contact and he probably gets, I don't know, 20 feet from me. And he looks at me like a dog that hears a funny noise, right? And he's looking at me and he goes, hey, man, are you okay? And when we're not okay, what do? We lie, right? I'm fine. I'm good. You know, nothing to see here, pal. Move along, right? And all of a sudden, the guy goes, he goes, oh, good. He said, hey, man, are you going to walk tonight? And I said, absolutely not. Like, you know, almost like, why do you think I'm hiding in the back, dude? And he goes, hey, man, that's cool. No problem. He says, we don't want you to do anything you don't want to do. And I thought, oh, okay, he's going to get me out of here. No. The next question he asked me, you know what's interesting, Dr. J? Without this guy, I'm not here. My whole career is gone, right? One person, one stranger out of nowhere asked me one question, changed my life forever. And the question was, wouldn't you at least like to watch? And I thought, well, yeah, sure, let's do that. Let's go watch these people burn their feet off. This will be entertaining. And he says, well, hey, man, you can't see anything from where you are. Now, understand, again, I'm at the back. I'm all the way in the back. I'm 100 yards from where they're firewalking. I got 3,500 people standing in front of me. I can't see anything. but I can hear it, right? I can see the big fire. They're chanting, they're clapping, the drums are going, people are already firewalking. And once they get into the celebration in, they're going nuts. They're celebrating like crazy. They're screaming with exhilaration. And what's interesting, there's a real fine line between pain and pleasure there when you're screaming that loud, right? And so he says, hey man, well, you know, you can't see anything from here. So just get in line and eventually you'll get up there. You'll be able to see it. Now he's telling the truth. And in his defense, he's right. I couldn't see anything. So I'm fine. I get in line. I'm not going to walk. I'm just going to go watch. And I'm kind of walking along and I'm walking along. And all of a sudden this guy comes up to me and he whispers in my ear and he says, he knows when you're ready. When he says go, you go. Like an embedded command, right? And he just goes pew and he just disappears into the night. And I'm like, what was that? What do you mean? He knows when you're ready. And so now I'm just kind of trudging along and all of a sudden I get to a point and I can see at an angle and they're doing it. And now I'm asphyxiated on that. It's like, you know, we're not supposed to look at a car wreck, right? But we stare at it. Same thing kind of going on here. I'm mesmerized and they're doing it, Dr. J. Every race, every creed, every color, they are firewalking.
Yeah.
And so now I'm distracted. Next thing I know, guess where I am? Boom.
You're at the front.
I'm at the front. And now there I am. And I'm looking down in that lane, right? It's 3 feet wide. It's about 18 feet long. And the coals are on top. They're bright red. It's after midnight. Beautiful summer night. The wheelbarrow's there. You can feel the heat. It's real, right?
Yeah.
It gets real, real, real fast. And so as I'm staring into the abyss, there's a trainer standing there. And the trainer goes, eyes up. Like, you idiot. I'm in a room for Tony for 10 hours. Guess what he teaches you to do? Don't stare at what you fear. Keep your eyes on the prize. Look to the celebration end.
Yes.
And so now my eyes are up and he said, squeeze your fist and say yes. And I went, yes. And he went, stronger. And I went, yes. Well, he could tell. He knows I'm leaving a lot on the table. I'm not in a peak state. So he screams at me. Right. So I threw my hands in the air and I screamed yes as loud as I could. And he goes, go, go, go. I took off.
Yeah.
Remember the guy? He knows when you're ready. When he says go, you go. I did. So we position two people at the end to catch you.
Yes.
Because at that point, I'd have walked all the way to Albuquerque. I mean, you know, I was in such a trance.
Yeah.
And so they stop you. They're like, stop, wipe your feet and celebrate.
Yeah.
And I'm wiping my feet. And I'm celebrating. And all of a sudden it dawns on me. I burnt myself really, really bad.
Wow.
I look at my foot. It's dirty, but there's no burns. Oh, it's my other foot. No, not so much. It's dirty too, but there's not one burn on either one of my feet.
That's
and
amazing.
I just walked on coals that are 1,000 degrees and I didn't burn myself. And what's interesting about that, I didn't know how I did it. I have no clue. I just did it. You know what? We've all done that. We do something really cool, really awesome. We don't really know how we did it, but we're willing to take credit for it. It's like, that's me. That's this guy. I did that. And that was literally one of the most exhilarating moments of my entire life, bar none.
Yeah.
Just like 3,500 people. So we're all celebrating collectively because what Tony's done with that firewalk, he took our self-belief, our self-confidence and our self-worth, boom. Now he raised us together collectively. So the vibration comes up with that. Yeah, but here's where it gets really interesting. By the way, that's a 4-day event that Tony does. That's day one, the night of. Now we're going into day two. And that next morning, we're all standing in the foyer. To the best of my knowledge, not one person showed up late. We were there. Yeah. We were ready to play full out. He's got us right where he wants us, right? Because now if you can walk on coals that are 1,000 degrees, what else can you do? So it just shatters limiting beliefs. And I'm watching people, Dr. J, and it's unbelievable. It's so beautiful because they're holding each other. They're hugging, they're laughing, they're crying. They're talking about the firewalk. They're talking about their, you know, the fears of their life. And I mean, I'm just going, really? Did we drink the Kool-Aid last night? Is that, yeah, we sure did. And so what happened from there was I met one of Tony's trainers later in the event. And I'm like talking to this guy, his name's Ted Macy, super sweet guy, him and his wife, Mary. And I'm like, so you get to do this all the time, don't you? You get to put yourself in this environment. He goes, yeah, sure do. And he goes, and you know what? You see those people over there with the black shirts with the pink writing on the back? Yeah. He goes, look, man, they're volunteers. They're people just like you. They came to a fire walk and now they've come back to volunteer to give back. And he says, and if you want to put yourself in this environment, go home, call Robbins Research, tell them you want an application for a crew, volunteer crew member. They'll send you one. I did. 9 weeks later, I got a letter in the mail that said, Dave Albin, congratulations. You've been selected a crew with the Anthony Robbins Companies. Pew, I'm in the front door. So wow. This was all going down in 95 and 96. Now I have a military background. I have a security background. So they immediately grabbed me and put me on the security team to help take care of Tony's celebrities, which we could do a whole show about that. Because I lived on a farm, I knew how to use a log splitter. I knew what kindling was. I knew how to use a hatchet. Mm-hmm. And so they put me on the fire building team. And I crewed probably half a dozen times. Now I'm spending $1,500, $2,000 every time I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And my wife at the time, my kid's mom, she wasn't too thrilled with this. She's like, who's this Tony Robbins guy? She doesn't know anything about him. She wants nothing to do with it. Cause you know, again, I'm spending a lot of money every time I went. Well, wouldn't you have it? Next thing I know, because of my security and military background, they actually hired me as a subcontractor to for the facilitation of taking care of Tony's celebrities. And so now they're paying my way. They're paying my airfare, my hotel, per diem, food, all that. So I'm at least I'm in the black every time I go, and I'm not in the red, right? And they did something really smart, Dr. J. They gave me a free ticket for her, so you could bring your spouse, right?
Fantastic.
And she went. So then she went, and then when she got there, after you know, on day four after she graduated, we were walking on the beach, and she looked at me. And she goes, "Okay, I get it. I drink the Kool-Aid too. This guy's pretty cool. This guy's a pretty good dude. You want to roll with this guy? You want to run with him? Run." And so she opened the door, and then let's see, from there in 2003, Tony offered me the captain's position, which meant that I would facilitate all of his firewalks globally. I did resist a little bit in the beginning and said, hey, I don't know that I can do this because I homeschool my kids. Well, they stepped right up to the plate and said, we'll pay to have your kids roll with us. So there I am, my wife and my kids, my two kids, on the road with Tony Robbins in 2003. In fact, our first event with them, the kids got to go to Sydney, Australia. So, you know, it was all uphill after that. In 05, we went to London. That's where we set the world record, you mentioned, in London, in the Docklands at the Excel Center. And then, now I'm just rolling along. And then in 2014 is when I got the call from Google. And they wanted to know, you the Dave Albin does the firewalks for Tony Robbins? Yeah. And he said, well, you know, if you're not under any contractual obligation or non-compete, we'd like to talk to you about hiring. And I'm like, okay, well, homeboy's a free agent. What you got? and that's when they hired me. Originally, they wanted to do a firewalk. What was going on? They had 148 executives that were graduating in Mountain View. And they wanted to create that paradigm. You asked me about the paradigm. And I want to explain the paradigm at this point. So when I walked up to that fire lane saying, no, I'm not going to do it. No, I'm not going to do it. And I'm allowing fear to control everything up into my life at that point. Fear had such a liar. It had taken so many things from me. And in that moment, again, I'm not going to do it, right? Because fear, what does it mean to me? Forget everything and run. It's kind of how my life, I led up into that point. After I firewalked, the paradigm was I changed it. And the acronym turned into face everything and rise, right?
Love it.
And as we say in AA, you know, I've been sober for 35 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love what we say in AA, and that's false images appearing real. And so that was the shift for me. And that's why corporate America has hired me now for since 2014, after I went to Google. Next thing I know, I was at NASA, Notre Dame, Virginia Tech, Remax, Microsoft, Heineken, Chick-fil-A, you know, high schools, you know, the next thing you know, you're on Dr. J's podcast, right? You just, you don't know, right? You have to be open to what's next.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happened in my life. And that's what's happening
brilliant.
With the best, with the veterans. Yeah,
That's
so
brilliant.
yeah.
So, just a little side note, we didn't get to talk about this before we hit the record button, but Dave, I actually went and did the firewalk with Tony back in 2015, give or take a few years. So, we might have actually run into each other
Really?
at
So
some
where,
point.
what city
Yes.
were you in?
In Newark, Prudential Center.
Newark, New Jersey?
Yes.
Oh my God, I was there.
You were?
Well, I had retired in 14,
Okay.
and I had turned it over to a half a dozen people, if you will. But yeah, no, I went up, I got called, I went up there, I hung out with the fire team. So I was actually in the room for a
Yeah.
while. So if you would have looked up at the productions stage in the back, I was up there. Yeah, I was. So it's very likely that our paths could have crossed. Isn't that
Absolutely,
crazy?
absolutely.
Oh my
Yeah.
gosh.
Yeah, that was such an amazing experience for me. And you know, that's a really great point to think about paradigm shift in that way, where you have this amazing experience that shatters your limiting beliefs. You know, when I asked you about the paradigm shift, there was actually a different event I was thinking about. June 8th, 1988. Tell me about that paradigm shift for
Oh
you.
my gosh. Well, that was the day. I started drinking at a very young age. A couple months before I was born, my biological father, we don't know what happened, but he hit his head, and to save his life, they put a plate in his head. Well, it was excruciatingly painful, apparently, according to my biological mother. And so 2 months before I was born, he turned to mom and said, "I'm going to the grocery store." We never saw or heard from him again. So when
Wow.
I was born to a single mom. She already had two boys from a different man, and we were all living in a one bedroom apartment with my grandmother, with my mom, my two half brothers, and a cousin. And when by the time I was mom was mom came from that generation of World War II and the Great Depression, right? They kicked butt. I believe it was the greatest generation ever walked the planet. And because back then, when all the men were out fighting the war, guess what the women were doing? Everything,
Yeah.
right? They built jeeps and tanks and munitions. My biological mom was known as Rosie the Riveter. She was working for McDonnell Douglas, building airplanes, driving rivets into the wing. And so
Wow.
she knew hard work. They knew how they knew they were the most resourceful, I think, generation of all time. And so anyway, she worked really hard. She was a server. She worked at the Roosevelt Hotel in Hollywood. And yeah, one day she said she turned she couldn't feed us, is the bottom line. She was working hard, but she just couldn't feed all six mouths. And so she went to her older sister, Pat, and said, "Hey, Pat, I can't feed David. Will you adopt him?" And Pat and Bob, my aunt and uncle, said, "Absolutely." So that I left Hollywood at five and went to their house in Long Beach. Bob's a military career, U.S. Army N National Guard, right? So we had a nice house. Everything was cool. I mean, it was wonderful. It was an incredible, incredible blessing to me. And then on the first day of summer, 1964, I'm 11 years old. Mom comes and gets me, and I'm going to refer to her as mom, even though she's my adopted mother. She brought me in the kitchen, and Bob was there, and my dad, and she said, "David, we need to tell you something." And with tears in her eyes, she looked at me and she said, "David, we're not your parents." Okay, at 11, really? What does that mean? Of course you're my parents. That's like take me outside and look at the blue sky and go, "Yeah, sky's not blue." Well, looks pretty blue to me. And then shortly after that, Dr. J, what happened was they both started drinking, and then all hell broke loose. Pat was a kind of a funny drunk, you know. Bob was not. He was violent. He was not a nice guy. He was a beautiful human when he was sober, but when he was drinking, he was not a nice person. And so they went to the store one day, and I knew where the booze was. And I went over. They were hiding it in plain sight. I went over, grabbed a coffee cup, had this big old bottle of brandy. I poured a half a cup of in a coffee cup, downed it. I was an alcoholic on the spot. I never had a chance at that young
And you were
age.
11.
I was 11, right?
Wow.
And I started acting out and thinking and acting alcoholically right there on the spot. And then it just boom, it just escalated from there. I never wanted to be inside. There was too much going on. And I'll just fast forward it. I'm in my third marriage. It's June 8th of 1988. Oh, but let me back up though. I did one thing that's important to notice. When I was a junior in high school, they brought me into the office one day and said, "Albin, out. You're done." And so I'm like, "You're violent, this and that." Okay, great. And I was pretty violent guy. And so they kicked me out. Now I didn't care. Because I was at that point, like, I don't care about high school. I just don't. I don't see anything you're teaching me is going to show me how to make money anyway. So, and I'd already learned how to make money. I was already an entrepreneur at that point. When I was young, Pat grew flowers in the backyard. They were beautiful. She, there was thousands of them, and she would go cut them. She'd take it. She'd cut the flower at an angle, not at the bottom, at an angle, opened up the surface area for water, right? And she would arrange them. She had a beautiful eye for color. She put a rubber band. She put them in a bucket. And then she'd put water in, but she put a little bit of 7-Up into the water. And I don't know what it does, but so, for some reason, that flower will last twice as long as the flowers that people were buying from the florist. So here's a kid out on the street selling flowers, right? I mean, so that was really my first entrepreneurial interaction. I learned how to sell and deal with adults. I got a paper route. That's a 7-day-a-week job. And you are an entrepreneur. You own your own business when you're a paper boy. I lived across the street from a golf course. And here's what I learned about golfers at a very young age. They suck. They're horrible. And they hit the balls over the fence. So what would I do? I'd go ride my Stingray bike. I'd go right around the perimeter of the golf course. And guess what I would find? Little white pieces of money, right? Little golf balls. I'd take them home. I'd clean them up. I'd go back to the golf course. I'd get the boxes they came in. I'd lay them in. They're all clean. And I'd line them up. Titleist, Maxfli, Dunlop, Wilson, whatever. And I'd go back into the parking lot of the golf course and I'd sell them back to the golfers. Right. So at a very young age, I had a belief system established. There's money out there. Go find it. So again, when I got kicked out of high school, I didn't care. I went and got a job at the biggest grocery store in the state of California. I entered an apprentice program through the Retail Clerks Union, which was a division of the Teamsters. And within a year, I was making about $8 an hour, which is like, this is 1972. So that was, what's that worth today? I don't know, $50 an hour. It's up there, that's for sure. And so I went out and bought a new Mach 1 Mustang, and I got my own apartment down in Belmont Shore, California. And I needed to make a lot of money because I had quite a drug addict problem. I had a drug problem. I was taking a lot of amphetamines because I was working night shift. And you know, by the time I got to June 8th, I was grossly addicted to heroin, cocaine, alcohol. And so anyway, I'm in my third marriage at that point. I married this woman. She was a bartender. Go figure. She had three kids. I thought that would help me sober up. Didn't. And by the time I got to my last drink, that I was living in the basement. They were living upstairs to stay away from me. And when I woke up that morning on June 8th, I went, okay, that's it. We're done. I'm out. I'm not doing this. The physical and emotional pain was overwhelming. And so my only thought in that moment was, well, then just go put a bullet in your head. And then as I'm contemplating that, right, it dawns on me, hey, hold on a second. You pull that trigger, yeah, maybe your troubles are over, but those three kids you love upstairs, you're going to ruin their life, pal. You can't do that. Period. Suck it up. Find another way. And the next thing I know, I have a thought in my head, call Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, Dr. J, what's interesting about that? I didn't know who AA was. I had no reference at all. I didn't know anybody in AA, never been to AA. Where'd that thought come from? And so I did. I called them. And I got a really wonderful human on the other line. I've nicknamed her affectionately Madge. And the reason I call her Madge is because she talked like this. She smoked 2 packs of Pall Mall non-filters a day, right? But tell you what, man, she was a badass. She was the gatekeeper. It's her job to interview you, and if you do a good enough job and you convince her, guess what she'll do? She'll call somebody to come pick you up, and that's what happened. She called Lauren. Lauren took me to my first AA meeting, and that was it. Once I got to AA, I was like, wow, talk about finding a home. And you know, they give you a coin for 24 hours, and then they give you one for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and 1 year. And then again, I picked up one this year for 35 years. Well, that's where the personal development industry and AA collided with me, because I was up late at night all the time. I had insomnia. My sleep patterns were all over the place. And so there I am, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, 1988. There he is, Mr. Enthusiasm, right? A young Tony Robbins is selling Personal Power, a 30-day program for total success, being marketed by Gunther Rancker. I did not like him. In fact, I thought he was an I didn't like Tony at all. He's all pompous and motivated and and I'm not motivated, right? I'm not feeling the enthusiasm. But he said two things that got me. The first thing he said, "We'll do more to avoid pain than we will to gain pleasure." And I went, "Dude, are you talking to me?" Because that's what I was doing with drugs and alcohol. I was either running from pain or chasing pleasure with the drugs and alcohol, which I never, it escaped me years ago. But here's what got me. He said, "The driving force in our life, where we make decisions, how we make decisions are twofold. One, out of inspiration, or two, out of desperation." And I was like, "Well, I'm pretty desperate. Maybe I should listen to this dude." And so I bought his program, and it came in a nice big box, right? And it came on these little white things called cassette tapes. Some of your audience is going to go, "Cassette tapes? What are those?" They're in the Smithsonian. They're right next to reel-to-reel and 8-track tapes. And so that was it. And once I got there, and then literally, years later, I found out Tony was coming live, and
That was
that's when I
it.
went to my first event. Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. Talk about a turnaround and a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
How
Yeah.
did you find yourself facing your pain? Because you can't avoid it once you let go of the alcohol and the
No,
drugs.
it's one, and I've had conversations, and you being, the world of psychology and psychiatry, I've had conversations with both sides, and I've had people look me in the eye and say, "There's no way you made it out, because statistically you're not going to make it." Alcohol is one thing, alcohol will kill you. You can die of delirium tremors, right? You can die from withdrawals. But when you add cocaine and heroin to it, it's a whole nother dynamic. And so they're saying, the chances of somebody making out. And by the way, I didn't go to rehab. I didn't go to treatment. I was sitting in the bathroom sweating it out, or on the couch sweating it out. So probably for the first 2 years, every day, thank goodness for this idea, one day at a time. I had to chunk that down further than that. Sometimes it was 1 minute at a time. It was 1 hour at a time. And again, one day turned into two, turned into a week, turned into a month. And that was the thing about AA. That's what AA does. They don't let go of you if you get with the right group. I was going to an all men's group. And when I went to my first AA meeting that morning, they took a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and they signed it. They opened it up and they signed it. They said, "Before you take that first drink, call one of us." And they put their first name and their phone number, and they sent that home with me. And I had that. And on day two, my phone rang at 8 o'clock in the morning. By the way, I went to four meetings my first day. I went to a 12:30, a 4:30, a 6:30, and an 8:30. 8 o'clock the next morning, my phone rings. It's John from AA. He's like, "Hey, Dave, good morning. How you feeling this morning?" And I'm like, "How do you think I'm feeling? I want to kill somebody, and I might start with you, pal, for calling me at 8 o'clock in the morning." And he's like, John's like, Yeah, I hear you. Listen, man, hey, last night we talked, and you live right around the corner from me. I know exactly where you live. Let me do this. Let me come over. Let me pick you up. Let's go to breakfast, and let me take you to another meeting." What? I just threatened this guy. And what's he doing? He's on his way to come pick me up. And that's AA. That's who we are. Because in the, you have the 12 steps that put your life back together. You have the 12 traditions that keep the group as a whole in line. But in the middle, you've got a preamble. And that preamble says, "When anyone anywhere reaches out, I want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I'm responsible." Okay, I'm all in. And so I've lived by that creed for 35 years. And what's beautiful, Dr. J, is that now that's spilling over into me wanting to work with, there's actually four different groups I want to work with. I want to work with veterans. I want to work with first responders. I want to work with single moms. And I want to work with kids that have been bullied. And so here's what I've designed so far. So we just scheduled, and by the way, I was on a podcast, and one of the podcast hosts asked me, she said, "Hey, Dave, have you ever thought about doing a fire walk for veterans?" And I said, "You mean as a group? I've never done one." Now, veterans have been at my fire walks, but I've never done one specifically for them. She said, would you
Right.
consider that? And I said, yeah, absolutely, I would. And so that got me to thinking. In fact, the very next night after that thought got planted, I woke up at the middle of the night and I came up with the theme, if you will, or the foundational, you know, nonprofit. And it's going to be called Operation Do No Harm. Now you're going to love this, right? Because you know, you're highly trained and educated here, right? So when vets come home, what happens to them? Why are they committing suicide at 40 a day? What's happening? Well, number one, they lose their purpose. They're over there. They're fighting together as a unit. They're moving as a unit. Everything they do is together. They eat, sleep, fight, do it all. Some die in front of others, right? And then they come home, they get fragmented. They're all over the nation.
Yeah.
So they lose that connection, that camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens? Their purpose drops. Depression steps in. They reach for alcohol or a drug.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you know, they're taking their life. So how do we turn that around? Well, let's start off by bringing them to me. So we put them in a room. And the first thing I'm going to have them do, and by the way, I want to go on record. We just set up our first firewalk for veterans. It's going to be in Modesto, California on April 13th. We don't have this loaded onto my website yet. We're in the process of doing that, but I just wanted to make sure you knew that
That's
we
fantastic.
Are moving forward. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to tell them, look, this is a 1,000-year-old ritual. And I'm going to show firewalks from India and Fiji and Portugal and from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to tell them, look, you're invited tonight to participate in this 1,000-year-old rite of passage ritual.
Yeah.
However, you're going to have to take an oath. So you're going to have to raise your hand and you're going to have to promise, number one, to do no harm. Number two, you're going to have to promise to recruit, to go out and get your other men and women that are vets and get them into this environment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when a veteran makes an oath, guess what?
They follow through.
You follow through with it, right? So that's the first step. So then what are we going to do? Well, I brought the board break experience, a martial arts move, into this experience. And here's why I did it. Typically with martial arts, if you graduate to another belt, you have to do a board break, right? You got to break it with your hand, your elbow, your knee, your feet, whatever. So I said, let's add this. And here's what we're going to do. So we're going to take the board and I'm going to have them write something on front of the board they want to move towards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have them write something on back of the board that they need to move away from.
Okay.
And then I'm going to have them write anybody's name on the board that they're in conflict with. So in other words, if forgiveness or reconciliation is part of that relationship, it ends tonight. We're going to give it to the fire. Why would you want to carry around a resentment for another human being? And you just can't shine. You know, you got to step into who you are. You can't go through life with resentments.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness is at the forefront here.
Yes.
And then the other thing we're going to do is we're going to have them, we're going to invite them to write anybody's name on the board that they've lost. So if they lost somebody while they were over there, or maybe it's ancestral, maybe it's a grandparent or something, we're going to invite them to write their name on the board. Then we'll take them outside. We'll have board break stations. They'll break the board and then they'll come back. We'll firewalk them and then they'll come back and they'll be able to take their board and offer it to the fire. And then of course, we're going to get pictures of it. We're going to get video of it so that they have that. Now, the other thing we're going to do is we're going to give them one of these coins, like AA, but it's going to say Operation Do No Harm. And then we're probably going to write a creed of something, you know, on the back. Like on the back here, it has the serenity prayer, right?
Yep.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yes.
So we'll put something on the back. And then here's what I'm going to have them do. I want them to put it in their hand. And I'm going to, and this is after they firewalk when we take them back into the room. And I'm going to have them, I said, I'm going to tell them, I want you to squeeze that as hard as you possibly can. And I want you to feel the deep, deep pain of what that feels like in your hand. And I want you to know that if you take your life and you go against your creed that you just promised, that's just a little bit of the pain that your entire family and friends are going to feel because you took your own life. So they'll be associated to that. And then, you know, we're going to have like, you know, little necklaces with our logo on it, that kind of thing. Then we're also going to give them one of these.
What is that?
Right? Okay. If you can see there, see, it's got the coals here at the bottom.
Yeah.
It's got the coals from their firewalk.
That's so brilliant.
Right? So it'll just say Operation Do No, it'll say Operation Do No Harm. And then, I firewalked in 2024. So they'll have this. They can set it on their desk. They can put it in their car, whatever. It'll be there as a constant reminder of their their oath and their creed. And then
Wow.
I did one other thing. When I light my fires, I use one of these. It's a
Can you
Zippo
explain to?
lighter,
Yep, okay.
right? It's got my logo on it. These are gorgeous, right? So I went to Zippo and I said, "Guys, here's what we got. We got 22 a day, closer to 40 that are taking their lives. Do you guys want to be involved?" And Zippo said, "Oh, absolutely." And I knew they would, because in 1941 they made a lighter and they made it for all the GIs and they gave them away when the men got deployed to Europe. How do I know that? My dad had one. So when I went to Zippo here a couple of weeks ago, I sit down with the design team and they said, "Ooh, here's what we'll do. We'll take the 1941 replica, just like we did back in World War II, and we'll powder coat them in black. And then we'll take a laser and we'll laser in Operation Do No Harm." And he says, "They're almost going to almost glow in the dark." She said, "They're going to be absolutely beautiful." So, thanks to my friends at Zippo for that. And then, of course, we have to create the environment for after, right? We'll have a Facebook page, and we're going to have some other things written in there too that they're going to do, and within their creed and their oath. So, so that's the direction we're going.
I love that. That all sounds so beautiful. One of the things that you didn't explicitly mention is that when these vets come back home, yes, there is that sense of displacement where they don't have that sense of purpose that they're connected to, but there's also a lot of trauma
Oh gosh,
that these vets come back with,
absolutely.
as you know.
And that's where Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning comes in, right? Because he got a little traumatized. Viktor did. Have you read his book, Man's Search for
Yes.
Meaning? So then we both know that Viktor Frankl, and so the audience knows, he was in Auschwitz, World War II, Nazi concentration camp. And they assassinated his family. They took everything from him. You're standing outside with other prisoners, and you're naked, and it's cold. You probably haven't eaten in days. And they strip you and they take everything from you, including your dignity. However, Viktor Frankl said, "There's one thing you can't take from me. I have to give it up, I have to relinquish it. And that's my attitude."
Yes.
And so we're going to be using things of that nature, if you will,
Fantastic.
because here's at the end of the day, we all get to create the story about what happens to us, no matter how bad or how good it is. And so, you know what I mean? We have our hand on the volume, we have our hand on the on and off switch. And so how do you want to change your life? Change your story. And so we help them rewrite the new story. And that's part of this, right? With this whole movement. Because it's why do you give a service dog to a vet? Because it changes, it interrupts their pattern. It gives them purpose. Now they have something they have to take care of. And that's the whole idea here, in the idea, go recruit. It's your job next year when we do this, or next month, whenever we're doing it, to bring your fellow vets to the table here, and we're saving their lives, one person at a time. And
Love
Dr.
it.
J, I don't pretend to think that we can save all of them, but you know what? We can save some of them. That's for darn sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Might I ask you to consider, since you have until April, if things haven't been solidified, a soft approach as well, in addition to the things that you just mentioned? I
Absolutely, of
think,
course.
as you probably can attest to more than I can, in our society, there's such a strong push for this toxic masculinity
Yes.
where it's always about what you do and getting things done. But being in that space of surrender, I know you mentioned the serenity prayer, but being in a space of surrender where there is a level of acceptance and gratitude and love, I think goes a long way that a lot of vets, people in that particular area of our society and our lives, don't really have the encouragement to do. So I think that might be very helpful for vets that are
Oh,
coming back as well.
there's no question about it. Because fear does not exist where gratitude is present. And so if you get the handle on gratitude, it's everything. It's why, that's, I think, why those two words, love and gratitude, are the two most powerful words on the planet. Of course, the whole Ho'oponopono that we talked about, right? That ancient, and that's another side of it. We want to bring the Ho'oponopono to this side as well, so that they have those words. We get them to practice. I love you. Thank you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. That's a beautiful side to it as well. So I think you're absolutely right. There has to be a balance in between the actionable, and of course, military. They are action driven, right? They're from the time they show up at basic training and they start getting screamed at and yelled at, because if you don't do it that way, it puts their life at risk. A Navy SEAL. Navy SEALs don't become Navy SEALs by sitting in a classroom. They typically become Navy SEALs because you take them out at 3 o'clock in the morning and you dump them in the ocean off the coast of San Onofre, and let them swim with about seven different species of man-eating sharks. You're absolutely right. So we're open. From where I'm coming from, I want it all. I want to bring anything and everything to the table. The beauty from our perspective is we want to take this out to corporate America and say, okay, look, we're going to need money. And if you want to put your brand, you're already spending money for sponsoring different things anyway. So, maybe throw a couple of bucks at this and, sponsor a couple of events in a couple of major cities around the country. I can see us doing a whole lot of these.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that's sort of missing in our Western society is, and it's more prevalent in the Eastern societies where we respect, there's a level of respect and honor for our elders, but for also people that serve. And to the our vets out there that go out into war and come back and are feeling so displaced, I think we owe them
Oh,
just a little
absolutely.
bit more than what
Yeah,
we've been
well,
giving them.
you can bring in, the meditation and the yoga and acupuncture and conscious breathing and breath work and the ancestral side of things. It's one of the things I talk about in some of my talks, is especially to entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs are rah rah, driven, mission go, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay, guys, here's something you better be really careful with. Yeah, you know how to achieve at a high level. Most entrepreneurs know that. They get that. But here's where but it's not balanced with fulfillment. Right? Now, Robbins will tell you, that achievement without fulfillment is failure. And I tell entrepreneurs all the time, you are not going to get to the end of your life and wake up one day and go, you know what? I really screwed up. I should have spent more time making money and less time with my family. Not going to happen. Right. So, yeah, I do. In fact, last year I did five events for the EO organization, the entrepreneur organization. And it's a really interesting group. They're, to get in, it's a nonprofit, but to get into the organization, my dog's out here. He's acting funny. My shepherd's like hearing me. And he's like, Dad, let me in. I want to be part of the conversation. To get into that organization, you have to be invited, and you have to show 3 years' financials, and you have to prove that you've grossed at least $1 million a year to get into the organization. And so that there's an organization though that will help with this cause. And there's a lot of companies out there that I think will love. I've reached out to the Black Rifle Coffee Company out of Utah. They're fun. They're a fun group. And then MIT 45, another great organization. They're also out of Utah. They make Kratom, and they make it a really great brand. It's a really high quality product. And then, of course, Zippo, who's helping me, and so on. So there's a lot of companies. We're also going to be talking to these guys. It's called doTERRA, And they make essential oils, which is another Eastern, modality that, you're talking about. So you're absolutely right. And because this is going to be, it's just not a one-shot deal, right? We can certainly get them, we can get that medallion in their pocket. We can get the firewalk under their belt, the board break and that experience and create the new purpose and do all that, but it has to be ongoing. We have to pull them in.
That's the
And,
spark.
yeah, exactly. It's the spark, but we need a lot of other experiences in and around, like you said, because you can do conscious breathing and breath work virtually. I've already done one. I have a dear friend of mine, Jessica Brace, who is doing just that. She does conscious breathing and breath work, and she does it through Zoom. And she sends you a little kit, because the other thing that we're going to do too is that once they firewalk, we're going to have them smell a certain essential oil. And then we're going to give it to them. So remember, right after the firewalk, where are you? You're in a peak state. It's exhilaration, right? You are just at the
You're going
top
to
of your
anchor that
game.
in.
And you anchor that in, little that, then they carry it in their pocket. A week later, guess what? Boom, right back to where they were because you anchored it in with an essential oil.
I love that. I love
Yeah.
that. Thank you for what you're doing in this world. It's
Yeah.
beautiful.
Well, thank you.
So beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Love and gratitude is something that seems very important to you and very much what has shaped who I am seeing today. How do you continue to weave that into who you are and your makeup and your authenticity?
Well, I practiced the Ho'oponopono. I started that off years ago, and what it is that the Ho'oponopono is the 10 most powerful words on earth, and they are I love you. Thank you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And so I started practicing those. And what I did was I would say those 10 words 10 times, 3 times a day. And I started that practice. And I did that for months and months and months. And the last thing I say every night when I go to sleep, as I'm getting ready to doze off, I say, thank you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I love you. And again, a very important person in my life told me many, many years ago in AA, he said, fear does not exist where gratitude is present. And language patterns are so important. Instead of saying, I have to go to work today. No, I get to go to work today. One little change in your language pattern can change the entire way you think and feel about something that's going on in your life. Because there's a lesson in everything. I saw a documentary years ago that will address this. And they started off at a prison. And so they go to this prison and they go through the razor wire and they go through a steel door and you hear the door slam, metal hitting metal. And they go down this walkway and you can hear them walking and it's echoing. And they come to a middle of the prison and it's a big round area and it's like four levels of cells in a turret, if you will. And you go up this catwalk and they go up into this one room and the camera turns a corner and there's a man sitting there. And you can tell he's broken bad. And he goes into his story about what happened. And he says, that from the time he can remember, he was beat every day. He was starved. He was sexually abused by a whole variety of neighbors and family. And he tells a story. I can't even go into it. I can't even talk about it. It's so horrible. And the more he tells the story, Dr. J, he gets to a point and he's just in a rage. And at the end, right? And he's screaming at the top of his lungs. And he's like, and if this is the way you've been treated when you were growing up, this is where you end up. And boom, the camera breaks away. And you're like, it takes your breath away, literally. And then the next thing you know, it shows a countryside, and off in the distance, there's a house. And as you get closer, it's a beautiful home, big circular driveway, and the doors to the front door open up. And the camera comes through, and about the time the doors open, you see the kids run by. The kids are running by, and they're playing in the living room, kind of a thing. And the camera goes over, and there's mom. She's in the kitchen. You can smell the chicken noodle soup and the chocolate chip cookies, right? I mean, it's your beautiful environment. And then the camera comes back over, and there's dad. And he's been reading the newspaper, and you know, there's a fire going, and he's in his easy chair, and they start the interview. And the next thing you know, he starts telling his story. And he goes, you know, so when I was growing up, you're not going to want to hear this, but I'm going to tell you because it's part of what happened to me. He goes, I was badly abused growing up. I used to get beat with bamboo. I'd get hit with sticks. They'd lock us in the attic. They wouldn't feed us for, you know, days and days at a time. We were left in the dark. We didn't know what was going to happen to us every day because I was really badly sexually abused. It was horrible from the time I can remember to the time I finally escaped. And he said, and you know what? He said, if you were treated as bad as I was, what else could you do than become an amazing father and an amazing husband? And then all of a sudden at the end, they flash at the bottom of the screen. They were brothers. So basically, the same thing pretty much happened almost word for word, day for day. That guy went in that direction. And that guy went in that direction. This guy, he used it to empower himself, and this guy became the victim. Well, we have the same choice. We get to decide, you know, everything that happens to us, we get to decide the story we're going to create. And so my encouragement there is create a good one, create an empowering one, because somebody out there needs to hear your story. They need to know that someone else went through it too, and you're gonna be okay. Because I say all the time, Dr. J, sometimes, you know, we don't need a lot, but just a little bit of encouragement. Somebody to look at us and say, hey, you're gonna be okay. Come with me. Let's go have a cup of coffee. Let's go have some ice cream. Let's go to an AA meeting. Let's let me show you some Ho'oponopono.
At the end of the day, it's you matter. Right? That's
Absolutely. We
beautiful.
all matter,
Beautiful.
right? Because we're all the same. At the end of the day, the chances of being born are like 1 in 400 trillion. And I don't care if you're born in Africa or you're born in Nashville. It doesn't really matter, right? Ancestry, oh, it's the same thing as well, right? If we go back, what, 12 generations, and we look at, you know, our parents and grandparents and great grandparents and so on, and we go all the way back 12 generations, guess how many people that is? 4,094 people. So, can we change the trajectory of our ancestors and what happened? You better believe we can.
Absolutely.
That's why you asked me about June 8th, 88. I changed my whole, you know, my ancestors are going, yeah, Dave, good job. You know, because, you know, those people, 494, 4,900, yeah, excuse me, 4,094 people. For both you and I right now, they went through all of that. It was hard back then. You know, there was a lot of pain and a lot of suffering and a lot of famine and just unbelievable living conditions. And every single thing that happened to them brought you and I to this moment right now. And
Absolutely.
they don't teach that in school. They don't touch on that. You know, the other thing, and I'm just going to use this moment to throw this out there, and that is we've lost this idea of rite of passage.
Yes, I agree.
Where is it? Well, I'll bring it back. Bring me a bunch of kids. Yeah, you know what I mean? Give me some 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old kids, and let me have them for an afternoon. Let me take them. Let me go show them how to break a board with their bare hands. Let me go walk them across the fire. Oh, there's one part I left out for the veterans. You're going to love this part. And well, it's the Ho'oponopono heart. It's a heart hug. So after we do the fire walk, what we do is we do, I call it the heart hug. And so we normally, if you and I were to hug right now, we'd go this way, right? Right, or from right to right. You do it the opposite way.
Heart
So
to
now my
heart.
heart is sitting on top of your heart. And then I have you take three cleansing breaths. Big, deep diaphragm with your eyes closed, big, deep diaphragmic breaths where you just fill your lungs with oxygen. And then I have you hold it. Well, when you go into the second breath, after they exhale and they go into the second breath, either coming in or coming out of that inhale or exhale on breath number two, guess what happens? Your hearts calibrate. They start beating at the same time. So that I'll do that. I'll take the group. Depends. Sometimes I do it about six times. And so now find a new partner, and then they'll do it. Then we find a new partner, do it again, find a new partner. And the next thing you know, guess what happens? You got everybody at that event, right? At that event, in that moment, right there and now, all of their hearts are beating at the same time.
I love that.
Talk about powerful. And here's what I love.
Yes.
I get to do this all the time, right? And I love the girls. The girls love it. They eat it up, right? And the guys are like, "Ah, oh, this sucks. Are you mean really? I gotta feel. I have to feel something." But the bottom line is that it's so beautiful to watch them do that. It's funny because National Geographic years ago went to a firewalk in Portugal, and they filmed it, and they got permission to put heart monitors on everybody, the participants and the onlookers. And as soon as the firewalk started, they noticed that everybody's heart started beating at the same time with the
Whether
heartbeat,
you are walking or watching.
whether you are walking or watching.
Yeah.
Because I tell people all the time, I go, "Look, if you don't want to do this tonight, don't do it. Fine. I don't want you to do anything you want to do, but let me warn you something. If fear makes the decision for you, you're screwed. Because it's going to continue to make those decisions from you. And the fears you don't face become your limits. It's real easy." And and sometimes people, the other thing I tell people to do sometimes is, especially when I'm talking to them and they're talking about hiring me, I'm like, "Look, you want to see what somebody goes through? It's real easy. Go Google Oprah's firewalk and watch her." Now, I'm whether you like her, love her, don't like her, whatever, that's not the point. Just go watch what she goes through during that process before the firewalk. Because there's literally a moment where Tony has her and he goes, "Come on, Oprah, what's the worst that can happen? Burn your feet off and die? Come on." He says to her, that little bit of encouragement, right? "I'm not going to let you get hurt." And boom, she walks. And she's like a little kid. She loses it in the celebration end. She is screaming. She's jumping up and down. She's like a little kid at Christmas. It's so beautiful to watch. And by the way, that's pretty common. It's what happened to me. I pretty much responded that same way. But here's where it gets super interesting. The cameras follow her, and she goes over, and they're interviewing her. And she makes one of the biggest business decisions of her life right there live on camera. And she starts what she called the next chapter. And that's when she took Harpo and went in a completely different direction, was within what, 60 seconds after the firewalk? Because you're in a peak state. Okay. I'll just tell you right now, when you get to the end of the fire lane, when you take that first step, you're in the moment. Just like Eckhart Tolle and in his book, The Power of Now, right? It's like, you're not thinking about anything other than right here, right now, in this moment. And that's where the sweet spot is in life is as well. Same thing with the vets. We got to teach them that. Because they're living in the past, or they're afraid of the future, or there's something going on. They're not in the moment. So that's the other part of it.
I love that. So it seems like what you're saying, Dave, is the experience you're giving people is not just giving them a peak state where they feel like they're on top of the world or they've shattered their limiting beliefs, but you're giving them the space to realize and recognize that you can have this choice. You make this choice
100%.
to be here and now and change the trajectory of your life. You're not letting your past write your future.
Yeah, the past does not equal the future unless you live there. So don't live there. There's another purpose for you. There's a divine purpose for you.
You certainly can't live in your past if you're walking across 18 feet of 1,000-degree burning coals, right?
Nope. Not a bit.
Love that, love that, love that. Excellent.
So,
So, what one tip or advice, Dave, would you give to our listeners who really need that courage to step into their joy and to do what brings their life purpose or that inspiration?
well, one of the things I say a lot is this too shall pass. Things going really bad, things are really hard, things are going your way, ball's not bouncing in your direction. This too shall pass. Now, things going really great. Everything's wonderful. Think you got the world by the you know what?
That
This
too
too
shall
shall
pass.
pass.
That's right.
I say all the time, stop looking for heroes and be one.
Yes, I love
There,
that.
you, you're here for a purpose. There's a divine purpose to you being here. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't think people can benefit from your story and what happened to you, then you're wrong. Period. You can do whatever you want. It's on you. But I would invite you to come join us and come be part of this. We're going to need a lot of people. We're going to need a lot of encouragement. Because again, there's four categories there. And you're like, maybe somebody listens going, I'm a first responder. Come on. We're holding space for you too. You better believe it.
Love it.
That's a whole nother seminar. In fact, there'll probably be a time when the vets and the first responders will team up and we'll move together as a unit. Where kids that have been bullied and single moms. That's a beautiful match. So there's a lot of that going on. And I'm really big into single moms. I've always, my mom was a single mom. My daughter was a single mom at one time. I try to hire single moms whenever I can. If you look at our website, right? Go look at our website. It's awesome. It's gorgeous. We need to upgrade it. There's a couple of things we need to change on it quickly. But she's a single mom. She created it. The gal that comes and cleans my house, she's a single mom. So, I'm all about the single moms from because I came from that place of knowing and understanding how a single mom, what a single mom has to do every day. And I'll tell you right now, if you can find a single mom, let's say you need a service of some kind, and you can find a single mom, hire her. Why? Because she's a mama bear. She will work her butt off. She'll work harder than anyone because she has to.
Yes.
Right? So back to your question, just come hang with us. We'll get you there. We'll love you until you get ready to love yourself. Exactly what AA did to me. They loved me and helped me until I could love and help myself.
That's
Um,
beautiful.
and 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 if you've and if you've had a really, really, really hard life, then guess what? You're the best of the best.
Absolutely.
Because people that had it handed to them on a silver platter, probably not. But somebody that's been out there that's got their butt handed to them time after time after time, oh my gosh, you've got so much to bring to the table.
Yes,
So
absolutely. Absolutely.
come on, come join us, come help us. We need you.
Love that. With that being said, Dave, where can we find you?
Just our website's the easiest place. So it's all there. It's firewalkadventures.com. It's all one word,
Fantastic.
Firewalk Adventures, plural with an S.com. And I'm there, very accessible. My calendar's there. I also have an academy. I do one a year. And I just finished it here a couple of weeks ago. We had 11 wonderful souls who came up to my cabin up here in the Appalachian Mountains in the northwestern part of the state of North Carolina, up here in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And so what we do there is I teach you all this stuff. I teach you how to go put on firewalks and glass walking and board breaks and brick breaks, arrow breaks, rebar bending, storytelling, how to start a business, how to advertise, how to market, joining us, like a chamber of commerce. So I go through all of it. So then you can go back and do firewalks in your hometown. You may not want to inspire to be able to do, Google. Okay, I get that, but that's okay. You could maybe go to the YMCA, or you could go, you want to, really, there's such a market out there. It's so needed. Maybe if you find your own veterans, maybe find first responders, maybe you go out and find kids that have been abused and single moms, whatever. So that happens. Again, they just graduated here a couple of weeks ago, but the academy's on there as well. It's called the Dave Alvin Firewalker Academy, and the next one is in October 24. And I bring
October.
in, and what I do there, I only bring in 18 people at a time, and for this next event. So there's a reason for that, and we explain that at the academy.
Fantastic. Excellent. So that's firewalkadventures.com. I will make sure I put that in the show notes.
Awesome.
Any social media handles that you'd like people to find you and follow you on?
We're on there. I'm on LinkedIn, Dave
LinkedIn.
Alvin. I think I'm Firebuilder 2 on Instagram.
I'll come and
And
find
then
you.
Firewalk Adventures is also on Facebook. And then Dave Albin, I'm on Facebook as well. I just
Okay.
we, there's two Dave Albins. Well, there's more than that. But there's Dave Albin Jr. He's a much younger, good looking, more than his old man. So you'll see him out of App State in Boone, North Carolina. And then, you know, and I think his is David Albin Jr. and mine's just Dave Albin.
Okay, excellent. So I'll come and find you and put that in the show notes as well. Thank you
it's
so
on my
much.
Profile page as well.
Okay,
Dr. J.
Fantastic.
Thank
Thank you
you, Jay.
so
Thank
much
you.
for your time today.
Thank
This is
you.
so
Appreciate
wonderful.
you so much.
So
Ho'oponopono.
wonderful.